Welcome, everyone. We are back with another Avalon podcast session. This is the fourth episode in series four, and today we are proceeding to discuss the creature in the fairy occult, but also the creature in relationship with ourselves and in shadow work. And I'm here yet again with my co-host Raven, who is a psycho-shamanic practitioner, and she works with animals and creatures, especially in relation to the dream. So this is really her home environment here right now. So welcome, Raven.
Wow. Thanks, Daya. And thanks for all the listeners and everybody that's joining us. It's been such an interesting experience to kind of like dive deep and flow through all of this with you. So just a reminder for those that are new here, those that are here all the time, we really highly recommend that you treat this kind of like a sacred container so that the reason for that is so that you're really connecting to your own core truth, because as we've mentioned, and if you haven't gone back to the first episodes, you can start with the dragon shadow, which we highly recommend, and kind of traverse through what the fairy accord is, then into the fae, and now into the creature. And the reason for that is because we are touching on something that is universal, collectively experienced, and that makes it of the utmost importance for you to be kind of setting that sacred container for yourself, getting your journal out, getting your book of shadows, and then opening that heart space, however you choose to do that, so that you can receive and jot down things that are resonant for your specific and unique quest this lifetime. So yeah, I love the creature, and I love that it has like the mythological and the animal kingdom component. And it's just like, for me, it was one of my favorite, but as Daya mentioned in the original Fairy Accord episode, we all have the components, and some of us will have more of a certain aspect than another. And for my own journey, I feel like I had more of the creature component to integrate, whereas somebody like Daya as a fairy doctor probably has more faith. Is that like fair to say?
I think there is. Yeah, it's fair to say. I do believe though that most people, and I think I can include myself in that certainly, especially just for someone who walked the mystic and fairy healer path, the creature is the aspect that perhaps is more challenging in today's world, in the 21st century. So although I started my journey with the creature and the animal aspect, and we can talk about later which specific animals were there for us, I really feel that that's kind of alive, but it's more challenging for people because of what it really represents and what it means, right? So before we even go any deeper, just to say that when we use the word creature, we are talking about animals, absolutely animals that we can witness and see, animals that might have been extinct now, right, but they existed up on the earth. And we are also talking about creature beings that are beings of half a half creature, or beings that are not fae by origin. So a pen or a Cernunnos like creature, which is a half goat, or animals that are half horse, half goat. The Draconis is a good example as well, half serpent, half human. Mermaids are, I kind of consider mermaids fae, but they could be considered as part of, a creature's side of the fairy accord. And before I go any deeper into this, we are not here really to draw distinct lines between what's what, because within the fae there's creature and human, and within the human there's fae and creature, and within the creature you'll find out today that there is a bit of human and there is a bit of fae also. So we're all kind of connected, and yes, so For me, the creature in the fairy accord represents two very cardinal energies, frequencies that exist in the human collective. Also, one of them is innocence and the other is primal intuition. And I think it's the primal intuition part that I find is maybe more challenging to integrate, right? Because our animalistic urges and the way we sort of exist in a physical world is highlighted more in the creature, because the creature is actually the one that grounds the experience we have in fairy, vid de fae, into a physical, touchable reality, because they exist and walk amongst us.
Yeah. And maybe we can even start there with the grounding into that innocence and into the kind of that. I love the primal innocence. I would have called it instinct. Intuition.
Intuition.
I think that makes it more of a feminine embodiment, like mm-hmm. in that kind of. Yeah, because actually, I really want to highlight this as an integration, because we can really isolate that animal soul. So if we look at the creature, for me, I consider it, and this is like why I really like working with it, I would agree with what Dea is saying. The mermaid, I might even classify as more of a creature component, like a satyr or a centaur. But then also you can kind of have it in the fae or bleeding into it if you're going to go for a naiad or the mer beings and then kind of classify them as water beings and things. But they really do exist in all realms, but where they're rooted is in the tangible reality. If we even want to look at the chakra system, like it's really in those urges. So I love that, like you kind of took like how I would describe, you know, an instinctual innocence, but put it more in that intuitive. So that to me is like an integrated creature. So because it's combining the more dreamy otherworldly aspects of those guides and allies into the more tangible physical through our intuitive experience. So I don't even know where you want to start.
I'd really love for you to talk about animals in the dream first, and why and how an animal can show up in someone's dream and what that might mean to an individual, especially those listeners who have like repeated dreams with a specific animal or many. So the dreams are filled with creature kind.
Yeah, and like maybe I can even start before that. I actually have kind of my own words and terms for how I like to identify animals. So take it or leave it. So number one, a dream animal in general can actually come in the form of these three, like, I guess, categories. So number one, for me, a power animal is an animal that is coming to you, whether it's in a dream, whether it's in a journey, whether it is in the physical reality, that is actually more akin to this maybe inner creature animal component of you. Why? Because a power animal, in the way that I define it, is an extension of your personal power. This is an animal that has been with you for your journey. This is an animal that normally we don't necessarily choose. It chooses us, whether that's through a shamanic initiation or whether that's through a near-life death experience. Sometimes an animal can present itself, but basically that to me is a power animal. It is an extension of your personal power. Then we have what I like to call messenger animals. So some people call these spirit animals, but I'm just like, I'm very careful with my words. And so I like to call messenger animals. These are animals that, again, it doesn't matter where they're showing up. It doesn't matter whether it's a dream, whether it's in the physical reality, but these messenger animals are ones that are repeatedly coming to you. Maybe all of a sudden, you know, you're like, wow, I'm seeing tons of dragonflies. Like they are just showing up everywhere. I'm seeing them, you know, I'm pulling them out of oracle decks. I'm seeing them as I'm going on my walk. That, you know, those are animals that are coming in for a specific portion of your journey, and they may or may not stay with you, but they have a special message for you, and that can happen in the dream, which I will get to. And then third, we have what are just called symbolic animals. Some people call these totem animals, but I just don't really like cultural appropriation. And I know totem is just in the dictionary a symbolic word. So that's kind of my reasoning. And I reflect these word choices to you. Just call it a symbol. It's a symbolic animal. What does that mean? Those are usually ones that you pick yourself. Like maybe you collect cats. Or I know for me, I was like really obsessed with Dalmatians, which maybe was a weird one, but like, you know, or the wolf, like all of a sudden, these are ones that you're very passionate about. They're a symbol to you. They're something that you've chosen this life and you want to like work with. And it's something that's more, you know, just something that you're kind of choosing. So that's kind of just how I define all the animals. So with that being said, to answer your question, Dea, in the dream, first of all, dreams are so subjective in how people analyze them and how they interpret them. So you can take an analytical view and then look for like the symbol of an animal. And that's how like a Jungian analyst might do a dream. But you can also take this otherworldly aspect, and then you can look at it like how I was saying. So for me, to use myself as an example, I don't mind sharing this. I have a black panther that I've been able to see in this reality. Like, so that he's kind of like my otherworldly bridge. And that is one of my power animals. So he's like my main power animal, one of my main extensions of power. And then within the dream, that is an ally of mine that can show up to support me. So if I'm having a nightmare or something, that might be something that comes in. It's also more reflective of if you have animals in your dreams that you know are your guides, then they will be showing you aspects of the dream or kind of taking you on these quests, whether it's a sleeping dream or whether it's a journey dream. And then other animals, like hopefully that articulated it. Sometimes if they're a messenger animal, then they're coming in. So whether it's happening in the dream or in reality, I kind of treat them as equal. But dream messages specifically are always aspects of your subconscious emotional landscape trying to integrate into consciousness. And in my opinion, the dreamer always knows what the symbol means for them.
I agree. The way I do dream interpretation, and of course, there's many traditions and symbols, and animal symbols mean different things in different cultures, right? But ultimately, the right way to understand, interpret, and integrate a dream is from the dreamer's perspective, and what it means to that individual. As you said, it's an expression of the subconscious. Now, For me, when these animals show up in our lives, so let's look at the version where they just sort of appear and you're really like seeing them quite a lot, which I think, you know, we're so intuitive nowadays. And that's like exactly what I want to talk about, that when your intuition awakens and fine tunes to the frequency that's most harmonious to you, you know, your gift, your aptitude, your talent, you're going to start noticing these sort of appearances, whether it's physical dream or, you know, you might find that, you moved next to a house with a specific animal that you've been dreaming of, so on. You become aware of those presences. And in those cases, there is an opportunity to develop intuition and awareness there by interacting with the animal itself. Beings interact with you, whether it's in the physical or as an image form, then there is an opportunity for you to actually physically be present with these animals and learn from them, and again build and develop relationships and develop your intuition, listen to them, find new ways of communicating, observe them. I think animal watching is a very good way to connect to the inner creature, right? Because the outer creature you're experiencing in this reality or in a dream is within you simultaneously. As Raven said, they might not stay, but they're there for that time for sure. And so to observe those animals, how they act, how they relate to the same species, how they relate to other species, how they behave in certain scenarios. I'm not saying experiment on them, but observe them, study them, spend time with them, take care of them. And you know, that could be a wild animal and it might be a bit more difficult, but there's scenarios that you can create, make the extra effort to spend time with the creatures of our world. And for those beings that are not creatures of our world anymore or at all, there is always what we call an animal shifting, right? So there are mythical creatures that show up in an animal form. So to give you an example, a Dracaena will show in a serpent form because it's a half serpent, right? A dragon often shows up either as a raven, a horse, or a cat. Those are the animal bodies that they like to take. Not exclusively, but very commonly. Kelpies often show as horses also. So there's this the animal kingdom that we have on our planet that could easily, because they are actually very close to the fae and the creatures that are otherworldly, can often shift into that animal being, right? So you can interact with the animal itself in this world, and as a matter of fact, you interacting with the creature ally at the same time. Does that make sense?
Totally. And like, for those that actually want to take this, like I said, yeah, this, you know what, thank you for this episode. This is really highlighting that this is my niche. I've done a lot of like personal embodiments. In the last episode, we talked about things that felt good in the body. So to kind of elaborate on what Daya is saying, and especially because we keep kind of hitting this home, but we're going to just keep saying it like a broken record, like you have to include the physical reality. So a lot of times, as an example, people might go on the shamanic journey, you know, with a guide, they get a power animal, or they're in the dream, they've got their animals and they're like, oh, this is the animal. I've read a book. Here it is. This is that. But you are missing out on core medicine if you are not interacting in the physical reality with that animal. So if the animal is not extinct and the animal is not mythical, and it has a real animal kingdom here, then that's a great place to start. And then what you can do is, and we've said this before, the seal, you know, if you're working with the you know, a deer or something like that, then you can kind of start working with like, oh, why am I attracted to these? What kind of otherworldly beings or the fae or these extensions are kind of happening with my own like inner creature? And then one of the stories that I would just love to share, because what I tend to do is I really like to work with animals with tools or create talismans. So like I was working with raccoon and I found this raccoon jawbone, and for a while it was on a necklace that I had, but you know, as somebody that embodies ritual, things change or pieces change. So you can like actually start putting it out there and like making different gear. For those that are listening, I'm just holding up my raccoon jaw. And then I also have this beautiful crow wing that I put like a piece of maple in, wrapped in birch and stuff, that was killed. Like somebody, it was on the road. My friend gave it to me, and I, with my fish and wildlife background, I just salted it and kind of made it into something. But those types of things can really help us connect to the animal. Now, another thing you can do is start crafting gear. What do I mean by this? One power animal that I got in the dream alone, I was studying and apprenticing under a shamanic practitioner in the jungles of Nicaragua. And I went in and thought I was going to get like a dragon guide, and I ended up like not when your ego's involved and you think you know what you want, the animals will literally reflect that. The creatures will really reflect that, I think, more than anything else. They will show you what you need. And so I got this Celtic heart. I actually had this deer, and I remember being like, a deer. But then when I actually started working with that, this was before I really knew how much, this is before I knew about mythogenetics. This is before I kind of knew that a lot of, you know, my inner kind of satyr, canoonist, like that kind of stuff was coming. So what I did was I actually found these sticks because I didn't have antlers available to me. Even though deer do shed antlers, actually, in this time of year, this is a great time of year for those that are in like the Northern Hemisphere or whatever to go and look for antler sheds. But I crafted some antlers out of sticks. And that might sound weird, but when I put these on and you kind of take things to embodiment, another thing I did was craft a wolf tail out of a thrifted scarf. When you get inside something, not only does that kind of, you know, when we sweat, when we move, when we get inside something, not only does that really, you know, deepen our relationship to our otherworldly guides or these dream animals, but then when you feel it in the physical, so when I feel the weight of these antlers on my head, when I know how I have to duck through a doorway or move through, what this does and how you can apply it into the physical reality of bridging those relationships is once you have something in the body, as long as it feels good and it feels like it has a heart, then you have this memory, and this will help with your shape shifting abilities or your, which is a fey gift. This will help with that kind of embodiment. And one time I was in the forest with deer, and I was able to walk right by them. And to my surprise, because I had been in the antlers, so I did not have the antlers with me, but because I had been working with my guide at such a deep level, and then because I knew my body had physical memory of how something felt, then that allows your imagination, this intuitive thing, to get really, really, like I would say, more present in physical reality. It allows it to have weight. It allows the non-physical to have weight in the physical reality. And I was able to not only walk by them like a big Celtic buck, but to my surprise, the doe and the fawn started following me out of the forest. And, you know, that might, and, you know, for those that saw my rabbit video where I was singing the rabbit in, like, a lot of people are like, wow, this is amazing. But these are gifts that you can ground when you start kind of bridging the spectrum of the creature, I would say. Like, that's what I would call it. It's like a very full spectrum of gifts that you can really start, you know, practicing in the physical, like I just said, and then you're going to get that feedback loop, and you're, and that comes from what Daya is saying, observing the natural environment and then kind of trying to embody it yourself, or taking like an actual gift from a real guide as opposed to just a journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what you describe is shifting, right? So we basically metamorph into a chosen animal. And by doing so, you know, and obviously you use these tools to change your appearance accordingly. But there is also the layer of the shifting where you just become that animal and you start thinking, moving, and seeing as such. And that creates a certain level of relatability. You begin to see the world the way the animal sees the world, and things start to make sense, because I honestly feel that the blind side of the human is that we cannot relate to what we can't experience, right? We have really a difficulty to understand other beings when we didn't walk in their shoes. So why not, so to speak, walk in their skin, not literally. And I think that's just something I wanted to highlight, is that all these tools that you've shown us are acquired, obviously, in alignment with the fairy accord, right? So they are exchanged, they are found, they are gifted, and they're not, you know, attained through either killing or grave robbing or anything like that is basically what I said in the earlier episode. When you find something that has died in this case or has no specific purpose, and you create a sacred purpose for it, right? And then that becomes the tools of your shifting. And as you, some of us can just do it. I think I've really always thought, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've had this theory that people who use tools more, like you with the antles, the feathers, and I do it with my runes, right? And like I've got these tinkery things, just things that I collect. I need a stick from every tree that I ever met. And just like we work with sort of tools, it's more fae medicine, whilst I always felt that the elven medicine is more the experience, it's just the being in something. So what I'm trying to say is that you can shift into an animal guide without the tools. You don't need to now scratch your head to find the tail and the head and all that, but it does help with the embodiment.
Yeah. And like, I'm like, shape-shifting in general is like a real passionate like, I have really strong views on it, so I won't tangent off into that, but it is one of the, it is humanity's first kind of influence into the human psyche and embodiment. And a lot of us are gifted shifters, like Daya is saying. So one thing that I would like to highlight as a blind in the creature or the animal is keeping your animals just in the dream, or keeping those skill sets just in the dream. Like a lot of people are very, very open nowadays. It's more that we need to ground in the body. So I guess that's where the animal component and the creature component can come in very handy, because we can almost like kind of, and I see it a lot, we can almost like keep our gifts and those types of natural innate skill sets or our dream animal allies like only in the dream realm or the otherworldly realm. And so aspects that we really need to be considering is not only this observation and like working with animals and connecting to them, but, you know, also like, what are we really doing for them? You know, and thank you, Daya, for highlighting about the tools. So again, I'm not judging you. This is for you to have your own observation of your own shadow in the fairy accord. So many people nowadays are literally buying, you know, full raven wings or full like animal parts or things like that. When like, take the beliefs right out of it, take the right and wrong dichotomy right out of it, and add a vibrational energetic resonance. The crow wing right here that I'm holding up with my tree key from the maple and the birch and everything, this has such a higher resonance if I were to carry this into the forest or use it with my own practice. It has a lot more power and a lot more of a vibrational resonance with the fairy or the elven, you know, beings that you might want to work with than taking something that was store-bought. Now, to go back to when we were talking about grounding the fae consciousness as tangible artistic gifts, it's not in alignment for me to sell something like this. That's just not my path. But I imagine that if somebody is an artist, that I see a lot of beautiful artists that are, you know what I mean? They're repurposing things. They're doing what Daya is saying. They're finding bones. And then they're making that for you. That, again, is probably going to have a better frequency of resonance than something that you're purchasing that is not in alignment with the fairy accord. And we really do need to be aware of that when we're working with that in the animal, because disrespecting our inner animal is disrespecting our inner human. And it's like Daya said, it's a real blind where we think that those are separate, but that's based on our conditioning to put humans outside of the web of all life.
Yeah.
When humans are actually more animal than the fae.
Certainly.
Yeah. Like, sorry. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, you're no, I agree. I think you're right. They are. Even genetically, I think we could potentially argue that we are very close to animals and creatures. And yet, if you look at how we treat them, there's definitely any space for improvement, right? So the relationships with our animals, because we are struggling to relate to innocence within them, right? So the way animals exist, whether they are apex predators or not, right? So I'm going to highlight that they vibrate in a frequency of innocence, and the way they exchange energy, I'd love for you to watch, for the listeners to watch, how animals exchange energy within nature, because they are systematic, they are methodical, and they move with a certain rhythm, and that's how they exist, and there's no ins and outs of that, right? And you will not see an animal take more than what is given. And you will not see an animal will take what they need without a question, right? Because there's the instinctual presence of existence is so strongly in them. And actually that instinct of existence, that existential desire to be here, to be present, to survive, to thrive, right? Is a very strong coding within the human that we inherited from animals. But in order to understand how to do this harmoniously, we've got to embody the creature, and then we'll see better of how that actually looks in our world, where we, you know, our lives are very different than an animal's life on face value.
Yeah. But they still have free will, right? Yes. And Daya is right. So that's like where, and I'm glad that you're mentioning this, you know, in the fae fog where I was kind of talking about that heartless loop. So for those that haven't listened to that episode, please do so, because we already told you to. But also, how I think that actually happens is where we have the mind in the dream and the animal. And so the image that comes to mind is kind of like a rat that's like been programmed to like hit its like feeder loop over and over and mm-hmm. over. And we can start kind of getting lost in this unconscious kink, or this caught in our own story, as we've mentioned. And where I feel like that really happens is actually because of that disconnect of the fae not being there. So then we just have a human and we have an animal. And then they're kind of like at odds with each other, and it's kind of circulating around. And so the reason why I'm bringing this up is because we can really start working with the story aspects of the mythology. And we have to. Why? Because that's where the separation between the worlds actually happens in the creature and the animal. And I don't know if you would agree, Daya, but yeah. Why that is like, we can even use an apex predator, right? Like if I say shark right now, I guarantee half of you are going to put the shark in the villains category. It's going to have, you know, your subconscious, like, you know, going into like an unregulated state possibly, or maybe you're like resonant with that and your inner badass. I have no idea, but same with wolf, like a lot of the animals get layered with human personification of what mm-hmm. they are and what they aren't. And that's why Daya and I are really trying to reiterate that, you know, observing them in the natural environment is going to be so beautiful. Wolf and raven, as an example, if you trace that to the physical realm, they have a beautiful relationship. Ravens are actually called wolf birds, and they basically, the ravens will, like, you know, find a dead carcass first. They can't like necessarily open it if it's cold. They call the wolves over, and they work in this beautiful harmonious relationship together, and they can be seen playing together and everything else. They even have been known to like call out when there's like a live deer and stalk the deer for the wolves. Now, one could argue like, oh, that's so mean. But again, we're trying to put a human compass on what is and what isn't when they're not going around like a hunter with a gun taking out all the deer in the forest. It's more about survival for them. And so when we're using, you know, this is like an internal external reflection, which we're trying to kind of help you with. The animals that you're called to, in my opinion, every single one that was in mine will always trace to a mythogenetic thread.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. There is a myth there. And also within the myth, you know, the animal will often tame the archetypal beast, right? Whether it's a generous, kind beast or a villainous beast doesn't matter, but it will almost always sort of claim that space within the psyche, right? So what I mean by this is we can relate to the world, outside world, from our beast mind, so to speak, and perceive the world from that beast mind, or more from that, as you said, that sort of base chakra primer response that comes from our inner animal. And then we will resonate with creatures in our mitogenetics who are mirroring those emotions to us in the myth, right? So I can give you a very good example. I have a very strong connection with lions, and it's always been there. And most of the time when, you know, we're giving the human personification to the lion, it means strength, it means courage, it means bravery, it regalness. But if we just look at the lion face, well, you will find a being that cares more about family than anything else, that it cares about belonging. It's hierarchical, it's protective, it's nurturing. It is the kind but powerful mother archetype, right? And when in our mitogenetics that is present, the animal can come in to fill in that space purely because it's nothing else there. There's no memory there. So those symbols that, you know, we culturally, spiritually associate with specific animals, yes, look them up. You see, it's worth having a peek, but ultimately I don't think they stand in every scenario. I don't think they always valid. So to just say, oh, well, you know, the raven is an underworld messenger. Sure, but the raven is also the raven. And it exists amongst us, and it exists in a certain way, right? So just to use that example and so on. So this is where we get lost in the creature, because we have human perception applied onto the primal world. We do the same with the fae, by the way. We have fairy tale perception applied to them. So neither will get us close to truth and understanding.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, and the lion too would be associated with specific myths or things, yeah. Like might want to like take further. And I know that I mentioned this in one of the episodes, but the Selkie for me, I have a lot of my blood is Scottish. And so, you know, working with the Selkie in, you know, one could call that a creature in the mythological creatures of it, but also a fae being. But then working with the seal in reality, how are they treated, this and that? And again, be careful, but in a lot of like students that I've worked with or things in the animal creature component, including my own, if you have physical trauma this lifetime in this body, you know, I would highly recommend working with an animal as a medicine. That has been treated the similar way. And I know I've already said that, but what this does is, like, we don't want to like project in a way of like, you take this on, but you can actually project the pain, or, you know, so that you're not like taking it on and re-experiencing it negatively in your body. You're actually like teaming up, you're aligning with what animal's coming through. And sometimes animals like that in your dreams and subconscious, you might actually realize that it's like not in the book or the symbol or the archetype, like Day is saying. You might actually go and be like, I don't know why this animal is coming in. But then when you look at its manifestation on Earth, then you'll be like, oh, wow, like this is like treated like this. I worked with a lot of industrial farm animals as well, or pick animals that aren't desirable. You know, really push yourself to work with like cockroach or, you know, some kind of other thing, especially if it's coming to you in one way, shape or form. And then also, I just kind of want to reiterate that when we are connected to that part, So when we're really in our inner animal, inner creature, it is sometimes really scary to be on Earth in the body, because then we really are triggering that fight, flight, freeze, fawn response. And that's where, and I know Daya will agree, that is where that sacred rage, that beautiful kind of release in our animal, provide a safe space for that to occur. You know, let yourself roar, let yourself cry, let yourself kind of scream that out into Earth. If you can be outside, even better. If you can put on like nature ambience or get some waves flowing, like kind of let that be something that you can do. And if you want to speak dreams, if an animal scene is coming to you in a dream and it's got kind of that charge to it, or it is attached to some kind of a suppressed trauma, then that would be what you could set in your own like ritual embodied space. And you could make time to open to that medicine in the physical, and then, you know, symbolically craft a tool or, you know, do some kind of ceremony and release that into the earth, because that is really, really effective in ways of like integrating that into personal power as opposed to personal pain.
Yeah, I know, I agree. And I think specifically emotions that are sort of what we call primal emotions, creational emotions. So it's like, you know, rage, anger, very deep love, it could be as well. And all the layers of that, the really heightened, high vibration, pulsating emotions, the feelings that really you think are capable of moving mountains, because they are, because they are charged. Those emotions, they can better be integrated and witnessed as well, because it's very important to witness our emotions in allyship with the creature. So being in allyship with the creature is such a physical, practical, embodied practice, and very different from the fae in a sense that it is part of the seen world, right? So as part of the seen world, we want to interact with the creature in this harmonious, balanced way, but honor also those powerful emotions that can be creational and primal in a sense. And you can take creature allyships, I think, so far really, in terms of whether then they become an integral part of your practice or your own medicine, or they often become very personal. Like my relationships with my creature components, they're very, very personal. And a lot of my allyships that are creature allyships are actually for healing. So on the other side of integrating those powerful creational emotions, there might be an opportunity for the two of you, for the creature and you, or a creature within you, to work together in a setting of healing. And that is healing that actually manifests physically. So now I'm talking about energetic healing, but physical healing of the bodies of Earth, whether it's water bodies, human bodies, animal bodies, and alike. Right, so I think that is the other side of the journey with the creature, or that's what my experience at least.
Yeah, and I love that. And yeah, like, because Dan and I have mentioned, we both kind of come from an activism like background as well. So if you know an animal is really, you know, working, you're working with one and you're developing that, and then you want to take that into your practice. Like we see tons of animal healers or animal communicators, or, you know, those are your gifts and assets, or maybe you're, you know, working for a non-for-profit or want to, you know, do something for, you know, Sea Legacy, or I'm trying to think of like different organizations for a specific animal. And it just kind of develops. And then also, yeah, as much as I mentioned my panther, I think I've posted about it like a handful of times. I always tell people about it because it's a guide that I've seen since childhood. But again, nobody really knows that animal or associates it with me, because it's been such a private healing. Whereas with other animals, I was more public with. So definitely trust that in your own journey for sure, like Daya is saying.
Well, but I think how, also, yeah. Sorry, just to say that do communicate with the animal guide and find out if there is any need or necessity for that connection to ever be discussed with others or public, or it's just between the two of us, because we're also living in this world today, right, where we are almost encouraged to display our inner spiritual working in a sense to show the way, but your way might not be other people's way. So there are definitely creature allyships and fae allyships equally that are not for public. So it is really between you and the creature to find out whether there is any benefit in doing that. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And I really do like how animal communication kind of made a comeback. You know, in ancient times, communicating to the animal was a no-brainer. And it wasn't just a shamanic skill. I know people like you to believe that, but it wasn't. People would communicate to the animals. It wouldn't be through language, but they would. There would be a conversation. And if you look at sort of still indigenous and sort of secluded tribal nations that are still following purely their sort of epitomic spirituality, they do commune with animals all the time, and they don't consider it as a special thing at all. So we do have this ability to listen, which is very important, and to observe and to understand and to speak to the animals. So that's again something that you can do as a form of building the relationship if activism is not your thing. And activism also it's worth saying, because as I have been an activist for quite a while as well, that activism that actually delivers tangible results, acted activism. I mean, it's in the word, but I have to say it, because some people activism is really limited to expression of opinion that will not make a difference. So activism that is hands-on. And it's conscious and it's harmonious. So also not because there are greenwashing nowadays, right? So we're in this world today where even these beautiful agendas of helping the earth heal and removing negative impacts is kind of become a propaganda machine, and that's I really don't want to push people toward that because they might get lost in it. So activism that you can maybe do closer to home, right? If you don't feel resonant with any of the big corporate companies that are doing it. And I'm not saying don't support them, because you can always do both. But just if you are one of those, so like, actually, I don't know which one to support. And, donation might not be activism is what I'm trying to say in alignment with the Fairy Accord.
Yeah, and actually, I would like to highlight, like, as a like from the shadow depths, that a lot of activism, like whether it's a climate rally, strike, or whatever, is actually rooted in the shadow of the beast, in the creature. It is rooted with you being a savior when you're actually a perpetrator. Why? Because those are based off of how and how you can figure this out is what the words. Words don't lie. So what people's words are telling you, are you angry about this? Are you fed up? Right away, you know that that's the creature. That's actually a raw reactionary instinctual emotion.
Yeah.
Right? It's in the animal. So thanks for bringing that up, Daya, because that is not in alignment with your own self, and you'll really figure that out. It's triggering that part of you that needs to hug the inner creature, that needs to release that sacred rage, that needs to honor the feelings of how we treat ourselves, each other, animals, fairies, whoever they are, and really just get clear. And so, yeah, and definitely a lot of the big corporations and things like that. So I wasn't trying to be like that. I'm just saying that that is a way that it can manifest on a large scale. I was thinking, I have a friend that's like really passionate about orcas. So I was kind of more thinking about the work that I've seen them do and things like that. But again, bring it back down into the small scale. It's way more effective for you to go, volunteer some time at a humane society or, clean up litter on the beach so that animals like aren't living in that and things
Exactly.
like that. But also, another thing that I just want to mention, which we have mentioned because of what you said, is another way that the animal gets fed is the screen. And it is an animal component because it's got that rat clicking. And I'm going to share this story. So there's actually this study that was done on rats. And they had this clicker inside their cage where when they hit the lever, food would come out. So they hit the lever, food comes out, boom, boom, boom. So then the scientists stopped the food from coming out. So the rats like gave up after maybe like 10 tries and they literally just starved. They didn't care. They just gave up. But what scientists found when that little lever intermittently released food. So food, no food, no food, food, no food, no food, no food, no food, no food, food. The rats would die hitting the lever. They couldn't stop. And that's kind of how the shadow manifests in the animal in social media. And so you really have to catch that part, like Dea was saying, that thinks or feels that other people need to see it. Now, we're not judging the sharing for those that saw me. Like I shared a lot of my process, but that was because it was being governed by an unconscious part that I then had to integrate. So once I had integrated it fully, I'm a lot more private now with a lot of my things. And you can't take something back once it's on the internet. Doesn't matter if you delete it or anything like that. Once it's out there, it's out there. And when we're sharing things like that and we're not maybe as skilled as a magician or other things, you know, sharing things like your animal guide, you know, shouldn't be taken lightly, I guess. Like, again, these are more skills to empower you, not to frighten you.
Yeah.
But you just want to take a pause. Like there's real big power in pausing and asking yourself, you know, do I just want to show this to a couple people, or is this just my animal or my fairy or my human needing to like have a hug or whatever?
Exactly. And that voice that you're tuning into, that is intuition, right? That is your own true voice that vibrates in a certain frequency, and you can kind of feel and sense what's right and wrong in the moment. And that is obviously your decision-making compass. So in a way, within the creature, there is that decision-making compass of what is right and wrong, but more so what is true and what is untrue. So it's very interesting for me, because at the same time, it is the primal urges, which through the media and artificial intelligence and social media and storytelling captures us. Even storytelling captures us through the primal intelligence, because what is that? It's desire, right? It's meeting a need. It's part of it is fear too, unfortunately, but it's passion, desire, fear. These are primal emotions. And we respond very drastically when we are deprived in our primal space, in our primal needs, right? If something is taken away from us that we believe that we actually need. So actually working with the creature could also be sort of evaluating that, what are the things in your life that you need and are replenishing you and benefiting you, and what are the things that you're convinced by an outside source that you needed them, but in fact they serve no purpose apart from keeping you repeating a cycle.
Yeah, that's great medicine. That is great medicine. And yeah, I didn't really realize how much and how vast the creature was until this episode, but it's, it kind of is our grounding foundation, and we do need to feel safe in it. And that is usually, like, you know, the root in an animal, like they're operating in that prey and predator kind of thing. And so sometimes I think we forget that we have that inside of us. So it's a good reminder that Dea has provided, that we just, you know, check in and feel safe and feel grounded and be in our truth and be in kind of our core necessities of what we actually need. Because yeah, it we really don't need a lot. And I think I know for me, it took me a long time to get grounded inside my body on earth. So just go easy on yourself and kind of like, you know, just let it be a process. Let yourself be in enjoyment of your own self and your own pleasure. And it is true. Like the road to hell is paved with your own desires. So it's good to know what those are and like, and have them integrated into a more beautiful way.
Exactly. And the creature can help you decide what's real as well, in a sense, in a physical world, right? Whilst the fae was helping us decide what's real in the unseen. What is tangible, grounded, touchable, feelable here, and that which you need versus what you desire, and that which you you know, we often talk about like human rights, right? Things that we just have rights to exist with, as opposed to things that we are convinced we need. It is also the other layer that I just want to bring in, and as I think is going to be my closing statement for this session, is freedom. The idea and an experience of freedom comes from the creature component within the psyche, because this is actually the animal that desires to be free within the body, because it's manifested. So your relationship to what freedom means to you, and how that looks like, and how it's experienced in the body, is a very good place to look at as well. So there's a lot more in the creature. There's a lot more in this topic that we could unpack. But we obviously tried our best to share the information and give you pointers, so you can begin questing yourself and do the inner work and the integration work yourself, step by step. And so please try and apply what we've shared to your specific experiences and scenarios and see how they manifest.
Yeah. And just like really ground in the body, because that is like the animal aspect of us. So foods that you are wanting to eat and things like that, and kind of like look at yourself like an animal you're taking care of. And I think that when we respect the body and we can treat it not like something we're just inhabiting, but actually a gift that's allowing us to experience life, then that is where we can really also care for our inner animal. And it will be in a physical, grounded way. And you will get clearer and clearer and clearer on your creature's manifestation here on Earth.
Exactly. Thank you so much, Raven. Thank you so much, guys, for listening and watching us. Please, if you have any questions, let us know. I think by now you know where to find us. There's contact details on all our pages where this material is shared. And we're wishing you a very enjoyable and exploratory journey with the creature. And I think coming back to discuss the human, which will be an exciting and interesting stage of this shadow working journey that we've gone on as well. Thank you very much.